Our scripture this morning is from Genesis 39, 4 through 10, Matthew 5, 17 through 20, and 27 through 32 in the same chapter. It can be found in the Pew Bible on page 34 and then on page 838. We'll start with Genesis 39, 4 through 10. Not yet. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her.
Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth until heaven and earth disappear. Not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches this commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the prophets and Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven.
And then in verses 27 through 32, "You have heard that it was said, 'Do not commit adultery.' But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell."
Avery, it's a beautiful time to be in worship this day. Thank you for your kind reception of Stephanie last week. She reported a beautiful time of encouragement and worship together with you. And I'm sorry, it's back to regularly scheduled programming today. I love biographies, and I love good interviews. And there was a particularly skilled interviewer that I used to watch on PBS. Late in the evenings, typically, his programs would show up, and I loved the kind of questions that he would ask to pull the person out so that we could learn why they were notable in their field. But about a year ago, I learned that PBS fired him. And I don't want to get into all the kinds of details because these are accusations and we didn't get into the court of law, but what was reported was that he was calling junior members of his staff, women, and telling them, "Well, I fantasize that you came over to my household and swam without clothing in my pool." And so if you've been paying attention to the news over the last few years, you know we are bombarded with these kinds of stories. And certainly, even with some of the highest positions in the land, think about the controversy over the most recent Supreme Court nominee and the kinds of things that were reported about his background, about how he got involved with alcohol and then inappropriately touched women. And then think about the President of the United States and the relationships that we've heard reported with playmates and porn stars. It's a far cry from even something that happened when I was growing up, when the president said that he lusted in his heart, and how the media took that and ran with it. But those of us who knew this good man knew that he was making a reference to the passage that we're looking at this morning. But if you think about these things, and we look at this writ largely on the national canvas, how do we relate to those kinds of matters? Do we say, oh, well, I'm not like that person, I haven't done that. Are we pure? Let's talk about something that's more mundane. When you're left alone in the house with a computer or your phone, what sorts of things do you investigate on the internet? Or if you go to a bookstore or bookstores online these days, what sorts of books do you check out? There are certain bestsellers that have explicit sexual encounters described in them. And many of these encounters happen between individuals that are not married, or if they are married, then it's typically that scenario, the marriage is on a rocky ground, and there's a new enticing person at work, and that person offers a new adventure to pull you away from the routines and the drudgeries of marriage. Do we consume these kinds of narratives and stories? And if we do, what do they teach us? I must say, as a minister, there are certain sermons that I like to preach and certain sermons that I don't like to preach. And this sort of falls into the second category. But I'd be doing you a great disservice if I were to gloss over this, because this is part of the Sermon on the Mount. This is one of the central collections of Jesus' teachings. And if we look at them, as we have over the last few sessions, this is the third entry on the Sermon on the Mount. It begins with the Beatitudes, the blessings of those who live according to the standards of God's kingdom. And then we had the passage about anger and murder. We ask there, well, what's the relationship between these two things? Particularly when we think about murder, we think that is so dark, and this is one of the greatest sins that a human being can engage in. But then Jesus says, do not be angry at a brother or sister. If you are angry with a brother or sister and you are at worship, leave worship and go settle that dispute before you come back to pray and to worship before God. This morning we come to the second example, the very next one following that, continuing this theme of fulfilling the law and the prophets. Jesus says that his ministry is not about replacing the old, but showing what the law was all about, to explain why the prophets said what they did. And now Jesus is saying, the law is not something that's exterior, forcing you down, but it's something within you. It's part of your character. It's part of your heart. And so now Jesus begins by saying, you've heard it was said, the law said, do not commit adultery. But I say to you, do not let lust grow in your heart. Do not turn someone else into a sexual object because you're headed down the road to adultery. And so there we see Jesus himself talking once again about another practice, another mode of thought that objectifies, dehumanizes another person. We lose track that that person is a child of God. Just as we said last time when we were talking about anger, if you say, you good for nothing, You fool. You idiot. You are dehumanizing that person. And now here, if we look at this other person merely because of sexual gratification that that person could potentially bring to you, it's that selfish preoccupation again that loses sight of the value of the other person. And that is what Jesus is saying here. And we read through that and we acknowledge that, but then we hit these verses that a number of people have difficulty with. And if you run into someone who says, well, I take everything in the Bible literally, pull these verses out. It'll be an interesting test scenario here. Says, if your eye offends you, blind yourself. If your hand offends you, cut it off. Do you think Jesus is actually saying you should maim or hurt your body? It doesn't line up with everything else that we've seen. But what he is saying here is something that catches our attention. You better believe you have someone's attention. You think about if you're a teacher and you have a student, you say, well, that assignment is due tomorrow and you better have it. Okay. But if you say, put your hand up on the table, imagine that I have a sword, and if that paper doesn't come in tomorrow, I'm going to remove your hand. You have someone's attention. And Jesus is saying the same kind of energy that you would devote to protecting your eye or protecting your hand, that's the energy you should devote toward removing lust from your heart. You think about that. That's a significant statement. And Jesus himself here has put this in the Sermon on the Mount, this collection. And we ask ourselves today, how do those words speak to us? We are in a culture that bombards us with images all the time. And once again, talking about the internet, you could be searching for a news article, and then suddenly on the side with all these advertisements, you could see some sexually charged image that you didn't want to see, but suddenly now it's in your brain and you're having to wrestle with that merely because it was over there in the margins when you were looking for a serious news study. Or you're driving down the road and a large advertisement selling even something like a watch can now have a sexually charged image to try to pull you out and push you in that direction and entice you and pull you in that direction. And then we ask ourselves, with the technology that we have today, with computers, with tablets, with phones, what kinds of things can we access with those simple devices? I'm curious, how many of you have an internet connection at home? They are pretty common these days. And you go into public places and you have internet connections. But I ask you, at home, do you have any filters on your internet connection at all? Do you even know how to have a filter on your internet connection? If you do not, then you have to understand that you have a connection that someone could walk in and use, a child, a grandchild, a visitor, could use your internet connection to access all sorts of destructive and questionable images, videos, articles, books. Things that would have been on back shelves covered with paper in previous generations now are right here in front of us with just a couple clicks away. And the astounding statistics, the horrible statistics, the number of children who see pornographic images before they even reach the age of 18. Some 90% of boys, some 60% of girls. Are we aware of these kinds of things, and are we taking any steps towards helping block those images? Or are we just lazy, or are we just completely ignorant and let those things pass? So in a world like this, what do Jesus' words communicate to us today? We have to struggle against everything in this culture that is trying to take sexuality and commodify it and turn it into something that is part of advertisement and then part of a billion-dollar industry known as pornography. And these are dark images, and Jesus' words speak out in the midst of that. All these kinds of stories and images in our culture are speaking about unfaithfulness. Lust is about breaking trust. But Jesus' words are about establishing relationships. And what Jesus is affirming here is committed marriage and celibate single life. And both of these kinds of things can sometimes be foreign concepts in our culture. I think back to a program that I watched when I was a young boy. It was just a typical romantic comedy on television. You know how the romantic comedies are set up. The two central leads sort of dance around each other. Will they connect or will they not connect? I remember one conversation that the woman was having when she was trying to decide if she's going to commit to this relationship. And she said, well, I don't know if I can handle committing to chocolate for the rest of my life if I also like Rocky Road. And you look at that metaphor and you wonder, well, people are more than flavors of ice cream. And yet that's the same kind of idea that we see constantly in our culture. The fear that if you commit to one person, then you'll be missing out on all these different things in life. And yet people are so much more complex than we often give them credit for. And we often pigeonhole people into categories and don't expect them to change and grow. And the majesty and the miracle and the blessings that come from a committed relationship, a marriage where you change over the years and you support one another, and that image of faithfulness becomes crucial to the trust that grows in that marriage and the trust that grows in our relationship with God at the same time. But then also the concept of celibate single life is another one that our culture cannot always handle. Either they think that sexual encounters happen to that single person outside of marriage, or they find this person to be odd. And the church hasn't always been very good with this either. And we think constantly of how the media is going after the Catholic Church for the abuses, certainly, and they should, within the priest relationships with young boys. And yet this is just one example of the failure of the church, because Christians have not been very good with supporting singles in their celibate commitments or in supporting marriages. And the statistics about divorces and the statistics about pornography and the statistics about all those different kinds of things really don't change too much when you move over into the Christian community, and that is sad on quite a number of levels. Jesus here, of course, is speaking to us, asking us to pause and to reflect about our understanding of these things. The human body is something that God created. And we often find even something as simple as nudity or nakedness as something to be ashamed of. And we can't even talk about it, or we can't even view artistic representations of it without moving over into all these seedy kind of perceptions of things. And yet the human body is something that God created, something that's beautiful, something that should be celebrated, and so also this relationship between husband and wife, something to be celebrated, something to be praised, something to be seen as beautiful. And yet at the same time, we have this constant legacy that this is something we can't talk about, that we push it over into the back corners, or we ignore it, or we don't want to talk about it, and then we leave it to these other channels to talk about these kinds of things. And you don't want those channels teaching your children or even shaping your own views of these matters. We just don't want those things. And so we think about a number of different examples that we could show to try to give positive images of human sexuality to our congregations and to the world. There was a movie studio associated with Sherwood Baptist Church in Georgia. It's put out several movies over the last few years, Facing the Giants, perhaps the most popular, Courageous. One of these was Fireproof. Fireproof focused on the relationship between a husband and wife. And that relationship was going through a rocky time because the husband was going online and was viewing all these sexually charged images. The wife found out about it. The husband wouldn't give it up. But then he had a conversion experience. He became part of a church community. His views started to change. And at one pivotal point in the movie, he takes his computer and takes it outside and throws it away. And where that computer was sitting in his household, he leaves his wife a note that says, "You are more important than that computer." Can we think about that? The wife, though, had her own challenges. Because she was coming home and dealing with this, but then she was going to work and she found somebody who was, on the superficial level, more encouraging. And he started pushing her to think about infidelity. But when she came home and she finally saw her husband taking steps toward her, she had to then sacrifice, turn away from that temptation and take steps back toward her husband and establish that, reinforce that relationship of commitment and faith. As we look through these relationships, as we hear Jesus' words, though we probably are thinking about images of failure, either in our own lives or in the lives of those who are close to us, because there are so many different ways where we can step aside and become failures here. And this is where the heart of the Sermon on the Mount becomes important. All of this is pushing us towards understanding that this is about God's kingdom, and the greater images are God forgives. And if you are wrestling with images of failure and the pain and the hurt that come from that within your own life or within the life of those close to you, understand that God forgives, that God loves, that God restores, and that God is about establishing trust and faith and commitment where previously we saw failure and lust and turning away from God. And so this morning, as these matters come to the front, as we dare not to dodge these things, but to talk about them, we must understand that we have made life more complicated than it needed to be, and that we need to go back to the original plan that God intended, and the beauty to celebrate in the images of celibacy and faithful commitment in marriage. Then we'll be able to understand what love is all about. This morning, we come to a time of invitation and commitment. Hymn number 344, Grace Greater Than Our Sin. Hymn number 344 is a time for you to make your own commitments, to remember the love and the forgiveness that Jesus is offering to you. Has that love transformed your life? And are you patterning your life after that image of faithfulness? If you've never made a commitment to Christ, now is the time for you to walk forward, for this congregation to receive you, to pray for you, and to encourage you in the Christian walk. As we stand together and sing hymn number 344.